A long time ago, a young man running for president said something about the American economy that sounded reasonable and even achievable. Restoring prosperity to the beleaguered regular American citizen.
I am tired of seeing the people who work hard and play by the rules get the shaft.
Well, the economy hasn't stopped shafting people. We learned that today, which a lot of people say explains the outcome of the 2016 election. But a new and very important book about this country's economy says that that idea wasn't even true when Bill Clinton said it back in the 1990s. The book is called Coming Up Short, Working Class Adulthood in an Age of Uncertainty. It tells stories of real people behind some alarming big data stats. For instance, last year a study by the Pew Research Center found that for the first time since 1880, young adults between the ages of 18 to 34 were more likely to be living with a parent than away from home. That's an alarming economic indicator, not a sign that young people would rather watch their parents' big screen TVs. Jennifer Silva worked for a decade on Coming Up Short, collecting stories of roughly 100 young working class adults from the towns of Lowell, Massachusetts, and Richmond, Virginia. Bill Clinton used to say, "I feel your pain," but what Silva discovered is that no one in the political system has felt these young people's pain. They are forgotten, they feel cheated, overwhelmed by realities that didn't fit what they were told in high school and college. They don't vote not because they are apathetic, but because they've given up on a system that's given up on them.
I have so many examples of young adults learning the hard way not to trust the social institutions that are supposed to work for them. So one example is a young man named Rob, who graduated from a vocational school with training to be a machinist, and he loved his work. But basically, the moment he graduates, he finds out that the skills that he learned in school are already obsolete. And he finds out basically that he'd need to have 5 years experience in order to work with his skills. For him, this is an example of an institution that he expected to prepare him, basically failing him. And I've seen so many of those. Basically, these young people feel that they are tricked by institutions that they counted on to help them. And in a sense, they're right. They don't have the knowledge and they don't have the skills they need to navigate them. And so in return, they give up on them.
And these are, you know, these are folks from all over the place having this very, very cynical attitude.
Yes, that's right. They're people who have jobs, service jobs. They go to community college. They try to raise families. In some ways, they are the children of the middle class of a generation ago who were very involved and very embedded in society.
Tell me about sisters, Carly and Alyssa, who are trying to move forward in a very, very difficult situation and who you seem to have befriended in telling your story.
In that case, it was a story of, again, falling mobility, where the parents had high school educations but were able to buy a house. They were able to raise their family. But by the time their children had grown up, it was clear that they needed a college degree in order to maintain this sort of stable lifestyle. But they found that they had none of the information or knowledge or guidance they needed in order to go to college. And so Alyssa in particular, you know, tried to go to a regional college. She didn't understand how to fill out financial aid forms. She couldn't quite understand what to major in or how that major might translate into an actual job. And so she ended up feeling like there was no one there to guide her, and ended up leaving and dropping out, moving back home, working in a minimum wage service job, and really just feeling left behind.
And in this particular family, the echoes and the consequences of the financial crisis are still very much a part of their daily lives.
Oh, that's right. I mean, there's, you know, young adults in their late 20s who are unable to move out and who can't really imagine a future. They're just kind of waiting for their lives to begin.
Now, if you were defending and you probably have already done this, defending a dissertation in front of some, you know, hard sociologist types who want
right.
numbers and, you know, how many people does this represent? How significant of an economic phenomenon is this? How would you answer some of those tough questions?
Well, I'd say we hear a lot about the kind of top 1% versus the 99%. But really what I'd say is going on here is that, you know, the last few decades have seen the rise of maybe a 30% of upper middle class people who have jobs in technology and information. And then we have the kind of bottom 70% who are working in kind of semi-skilled jobs, who maybe used to be the blue-collar manufacturing middle class, but can't really hold on to those jobs. And I think that the biggest divergence is that you have these upper middle class parents who, you know, now understand how competitive the economy is. They invest tons of time and tons of money into making their children competitive. And then you kind of have the other young adults, the ones that I'm interested in, who don't really have the public sources of guidance to help them figure out adult life. Their parents, because they didn't go to college, can't really guide them. And who are not learning the kinds of skills they need to be competitive in the economy.
What person was just really disserved by the expectations of this American dream, even the minimal requirements or minimal criteria of this American dream? Someone who, but for the grace of, just did not have a chance to get out of that 70%.
I think of one young man named Christopher, who, when I talked to him, he had been laid off. He didn't have a job. He'd been raised in foster care, so he didn't have parents he could count on. And when I was talking to him about his life, he told me, "I have this problem of being tricked." And so he kept having these experiences, like, you know, being taxed for not purchasing mandatory health insurance. You know, he couldn't seem to figure out the rules, and he felt like even answering the phone or opening himself up to people would lead to betrayal and would leave him worse off. And so the distrust and isolation that he learns is something that's really, really stayed with me.
I was riveted by this book. I was just illuminated by so many of the stories that you tell here, particularly after the election, where we're thinking about bubbles and who it is we don't encounter and who it is we do encounter. I mean, do you have any idea how important this book is, this research is?
I think there is this ethos of our young working class who, you know, they embrace self-sufficiency, they're choosing distrust and isolation, they're blaming other people who aren't successful. And I think if we don't understand that mindset, we cannot understand basically how to fix policy and how to kind of maybe help lift them up, but also how to understand politics.
Well, Jennifer Silva, forgive my hyperbole, but anyway, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jennifer Silva is assistant professor at Bucknell University and author of the book Coming Up Short. If you know anyone or relate to any of the stories Jennifer Silva just told us, we want to hear from you.
This is Candy from Delta Township. No, my mom was a single parent and worked in an auto parts factory in Detroit. I'm guessing I make at least quadruple what she did. I live a very different life than she did. I attribute that to my bachelor's degree, which is why I'm telling my children that they need to get a master's and preferably a lot more.
This is Ethan from Athens, Ohio. When my mom was my age, she was able to put herself through college and get a place to live on her own while making just over minimum wage. Nowadays, it would be impossible for me to do that, and so I still live at home.
This is Arlene calling from Oakland. My parents were immigrants, and their parents believed in the value of education. My parents did well and pushed their children to do even better. I'm hoping my children will understand the importance of education and achieving their dreams as well.
This is Rawl from Fargo. No, I probably couldn't make ends meet on what my father did. My father was a steel worker. My mother was a homemaker. So probably no, I probably couldn't. Which is probably why I'm retraining, hopefully to be an interpreter for the UN.
My name is Ryan, calling from East Lyme, Connecticut. I am 26 and make far more money than my parents. However, I could not survive off the same career as my parents had. Student debt is a killer. Go to the best school, not a state school, they said. That was serious hogwash, and they are still pushing that mentality in high schools. It is so sad.
Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE to share your story. We want to hear your testimony. We might give you a call and invite you onto the program. Again, call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.